Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This episode of the Cult Pop Show podcast was brought to you by our Patreon. If you want to tell us which films we should watch, get up to 2 extra exclusive podcasts a month, give us something to talk about in the post-credits scene at the end of each episode, or join us for our monthly movie club Zoom call where we discuss a film together, then please consider joining the cult and donating at www.patreon.com/cultpopshow.
Richard, did you know that you can spell till as in the shortened version of until? Just as T-I-L-L.
I didn't know that till I watched these movies.
I watched a movie earlier this year, called Till Death, that was spelt that way, and I thought it was some kind of pun. I thought, like, the movie was going to be about a till.
Like a supermarket worker or something.
Yeah. And I was like, why'd they spell it that way? I thought it was apostrophe T-I-L. But no, From Dusk Till Dawn is also that way. It's just a word. It's just a way to spell it now, because English has gone to the dogs. We used to stand for things, like back in 1996, which is the earliest recorded version of this of Till being used that I could find. Happy Spooktober, everybody, and welcome along to the Cult Popture Podcast. This is Film Franchise Fortnights on the Cult Popture Podcast.
Film Franchise Spook Nights.
Oh God, every night's a spook night when you're afraid of the dark. this is a podcast where we cover a film franchise every fortnight. My name's AJ, and joining me as usual is Richard.
Spooky Richard.
Sometimes I'm joining him. I'm not saying that I'm in any way more the leader.
More it's here. Just,
yeah. It's just this is the episode that I'm running. And when I run the episode, you're joining me. How does that sound? I sent you the Zoom link, you know.
Stop
defending yourself.
Both ones you said, I'm joining you.
Right. Yeah. This is getting confusing.
Yeah, I'm in charge.
This fortnight, everybody, we are covering the spookiest franchise that we've ever covered, maybe? That's by what measure? Any measure. It's a subjective question. We're covering the From Dusk Till Dawn trilogy, which you may know as being one film that also has sequels you didn't know about. So it's it consists of one theatrically released Robert Rodriguez classic, From Dusk Till Dawn, and it's 2 straight to DVD prequels?
Okay.
Are you surprised by that information?
The second one's a prequel.
Yeah, are you surprised by that?
No.
Well, you may be surprised by it, Richard, but it may not be all that it seems. The main trademark for the series, and spoilers if you haven't seen these films before, they're not necessarily great movies, but if you don't know anything about From Dusk Till Dawn, there's a pretty cool thing that if you haven't seen them, maybe you should watch the first one. So spoilers, the main thing about these films is that they're all secretly vampire movies, which masquerade as a different genre for the first quarter to half of their respective run times. People probably only knew that about the first film. I don't know if people knew that that's a trademark of the rest of the series. But hey, I believe
it seems weird
is
to keep it a secret after when you're making From Dusk Till Dawn 2. Like, I remember when I saw spoilers for the Cloverfield movies, when I saw Cloverfield 10 Cloverfield Lane with someone, and I was like, what'd you think of, because I'd seen it already and I took them to go see it, and I was like, what'd you think of the ending? Pretty crazy. And she was like, well, it's a Cloverfield film,
right?
So obviously it's gonna have a big monster at the end.
That's a good point.
And I was like, well, okay. This is the same person I took to the Nice Guys, and like 15 minutes before the end, she goes, do you want to leave?
It's astonishing she got two dates out of her.
Yeah, if you asked her, they weren't dates.
I know that pain well. I believe this is also our fourth franchise to center around vampires after Twilight, Blade, and Fright Night, although I'm sure vampires have popped up in a few other things we've watched before, and I'm just not remembering what those things are. But also, there are plenty more vampire franchises that we could get to maybe one day.
Mm.
Yeah. So let's talk about it. Let's get into the spooky season, the sweltering hot spooky season as it is in New Zealand, because I mean, I do live in an attic, so maybe that's got something to do with it.
Yeah, it's been pretty mild the last few days.
Oh, it's been so hot here. The first film.
Disagree.
We live in different cities. Ding, ding, ding. Finish your drink.
Okay.
From Dusk Till Dawn, 1996. This is directed, as I said, by Robert Rodriguez, which actually makes this the 10th Robert Rodriguez film we've watched for the podcast, making him the second most watched director we've ever watched in the podcast. Yeah, he comes in after
what
Robert
the
Vince.
Heck?
Yep.
What comes the actual heck?
after Robert Vince, who has 16 films, and he's just above William Lau of Barbie fame and Charles Grosvenor of Land Before Time.
I would have thought he'd be above Grosvenor, but wow.
He is.
Is this... Oh, I would have thought he'd be below Grosvenor, sorry. That's what I meant to say.
So Grosvenor and Lau have 9 films each. So Robert Rodriguez has 10. So, like, he's officially above those two with the addition of From Dusk Till Dawn. And this does make Rodriguez our most covered director who has at least been at the helm of 3 distinct franchises, because those other 3 people have all done the same series. Robert Vince, of course, doing the Ear Buds. And whereas Robert Rodriguez has done this, has done Spy Kids / Machete, which I feel I have to count as one if I'm saying Robert Vince counts as one, and Al Mariachi, of course.
Do you know who our most watched actors are?
Yes, I do, and that's coming up as well.
Oh,
well, you can tell us number one if you want. I don't have that written down.
It's Kelly Sheridan.
Yeah.
But it's like our top 5 are all people we haven't seen. They're just all voice actors.
Exactly.
Usually primarily Barbie and Land Before Time. The most seen actor is Desmond Llewellyn.
From James Bond.
17 films.
So, do you know what From Dusk Till Dawn has on Rotten Tomatoes?
I'm going to guess like barely fresh. 64.
Barely fresh. 62% on Rotten Tomatoes. And can you tell me what it's about for those who haven't seen it or need a reminder?
From Dusk to Dawn is about these two... Are they actually... Yeah, they are brothers.
Yeah, the Gecko brothers.
Yeah, so like sort of criminals, generally just criminals, who take a family as hostage, and they're in this big RV, and it's Harvey Keitel plays the patriarch of the family. The brothers are played by George Clooney and Quentin Tarantino, bizarrely for both, like, it's bizarre that both of them are in it. But they, they're going to cross to this bar in Mexico where they're meeting their contact kind of thing, because they're wanted, you know, so they hide out in this bar called the Titty Twister, which... is open from dusk till dawn, and it's it's actually run by vampires, we find out halfway through the movie. And you know, like you mentioned, is quite a famous twist. But then the father of the family is killed, and so is Quentin Tarantino, so George Clooney has to kind of like lead the two kids to safety and get out of this vampire den.
The adopted brother dies, and it ends up with only being George Clooney's character and the elder sister surviving.
Yeah, which, like, I say, and we'll get it now, I guess we'll now get into what we kind of thought of the film, is that, so, like, the idea of, like, a criminal that's held your family hostage, and then, you're like, the only person he loves dies, your dad dies, and now he's forced to, like, take care of these two kids. He's supposed to take care of you. It's like such a good idea and such a like great rich dynamic, but it's like not really. They don't do enough with it.
The movie ends and they go their separate ways. I wrote that down as well.
Like the movie should be about a criminal forced to look after these two kids and a vampire den. Like, that's such a cool idea.
Yeah.
And it's like, it got halfway through that kind of part of the film. And I was like, oh, this is the plot, isn't it? And then I was like, and then it's over so quickly after that. Like, Harvey Keitel's with them for quite a bit of their, like, the remainder of, you know, the fighting the vampires. And so, yeah, that was disappointing. That I was like, that's a great idea for a film, and it's not. And it's just, it's a cherry on top. It's not the whole sundae.
Yeah, right. And it's also, I agree. And I wrote down here that I thought the ending was probably too depressing, that, like, all the best characters die. And then the daughter is just told, well, see you later. I'm responsible. I'm literally responsible for your entire family being killed. See you later. You know, because he held them hostage. So it is worth mentioning before we get any further that this was written by Quentin Tarantino. This is one of those things where it's, like, often mistaken as being directed by him, and it stars him. And so he feels, you know, but that's the connection, is that he actually wrote it.
Yeah.
And this is a movie I hadn't seen. You hadn't seen it either, sounds
had
like.
Not seen it. Hand to God, had not seen it.
It was always one that felt like I missed when I was a teenager, which would have been probably the better time to watch this film. Bit of a content warning going forward. There's some pretty grim character traits that Quentin Tarantino gave himself that we should probably discuss.
Go to a certain corner, which we can now lead ourselves into nicely. Well,
okay. So we have a little treat for a recurring segment on the show called Problematic Corner. However, it's a theme song. We've got a theme song for it. However, I'm not ready to call what we're going to talk about Problematic Corner, because the movie itself doesn't present it as a good thing. That's where, right, like, having
okay,
dark
so
themes,
we've got a theme song, but you're not going to hear it.
Yeah, you're not going to hear it. I think we need to use Problematic Corner.
Okay, yeah, sweet. Suggest problematic franchises and on Patreon, because we've got a killer theme song for it, but
do
you're
know
not going to hear
mean,
it.
Though?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, it's not
it's
a movie.
Glorifying so, it is what's problematic. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So Quentin Tarantino, for some reason, made his character a rapist in this movie. What I thought was interesting about this is that I knew going into this film that the twist was it was about vampires. So instead, the real shock for me was actually discovering that Quentin Tarantino's character is decidedly not a somewhat likable outlaw that the film's poster would have you believe, but like a disgusting, despicable sex offender who rapes people in the movie and who really only exists more as a looming antagonistic threat for the good characters until he's killed by Salma Hayek as the first sort of sacrificial lamb of the vampire twist, which is a great thing to do with that character. But it is, if anything's problematic, it's that the movie poster and marketing is like this buddy movie of George Clooney and Quentin Tarantino. And it's like, they're both pretty unlikable for pretty much the whole movie.
Well, George Clooney's George Clooney, so it's like, how much can you really hate him? But
the thing.
Yeah, because he could be like, you know, you're lovable, I don't kill people, you know. But because that is kind of the thing, is that like he leaves Quentin alone with like the maid or whoever she is, and he comes back and she's been raped and murdered, and he's like, what the fuck did you do this for? It's like he's horrified and outraged, and he's also a criminal, and so it shows that like he has some kind of boundary, but Quentin doesn't.
And I agree, it's almost a not exactly saving the cat, but being mad that the cat was killed moment where he tells off Tarantino for doing this. But, like, the fact he doesn't, like, kill him or disown him right there.
Well, they're brothers.
Made me... No, I know, but it made me not like the character going forward into the movie. And I think when it began, I was worried this was going to be one of those weird mid-90s Tarantino decisions where he, like, he still does to this day, where he takes the, like, this main character and gives them, like, an unforgivable trait. Like, I was, like, with Brad Pitt in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, how he, like, probably murdered his wife.
And if you read the novelization, definitely murdered his wife.
Right. And it's like, it's one of those things where I was like, is Quentin Tarantino trying to like give a rapist a redemption arc? Because I am not interested in that.
Yeah, no, in his mind, he's like the cool character of the film.
Yeah. And like, to his credit, it's not that. I think it's maybe a little weird that he cast himself as this horrible person, but it's not. The film, the only way the film lies to you is, as I said, is the marketing making it look like it's some kind of buddy movie between Clooney and Tarantino. What are your thoughts on Tarantino's character and all the characters? Do you have any?
I thought Tarantino's character was great. Yeah. Really liked him. Really. Like George Clooney.
I mean, he's good at it.
Yeah, he actually is. It's probably his best acting performance. Yeah. It is really interesting. Like, the film is. It's this really interesting insight into like the kind of movies Tarantino likes.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like, Tarantino makes good films. I'm sorry, but he does. And, well, I mean, Inglourious Basterds is a fantastic movie, I think. And it shows like that he understands the craft of filmmaking. But it's super interesting. It's like he's probably. Because you listen to him talk and he loves these like pulpy kind of grindhouse films and whatnot. And it's like, he probably has hundreds of scripts like this just floating around that he, because like there's a great interview between him and Robert Rodriguez that I've spoken about recently, but
it was on the Al Mariachi episode.
Yeah, but it's like Robert Rodriguez talks about how Tarantino has just a bunch of scripts lying around that people would kill for, and it's like,
This is the only one that got out.
I fully understand that like Tarantino probably has 100 scripts like this, and I fully get that like Robert Rodriguez is probably the dude who could or should make them. That it's like he's Tarantino if Tarantino wasn't prestigious. Like if Tarantino rolled around in the mud with Robert Rodriguez, and it's like you get this film.
Yeah, no, that's a good way to put it. I thought that I much preferred Harvey Keitel's character to Clooney, and I actually
preferred the good guy to the bad guy.
Well, in the sense that like the movie ends with these two survivors, and I think you're supposed to be given closure from like the two cool characters surviving, and it's like, I think I would have preferred the family survived, to be honest, because they've got this great character dynamic where Harvey Keitel's wife has died, within the last year, and he used to be like a reverend, and now he's lost his faith, and there's all this like religious imagery going on with vampires and all that thing, and when he got bit, I was like, that's the best character. Like, that's the character I've invested in. I want Clooney to die. Clooney should be the one that dies.
In the film?
I think. Yeah, in the film. Seth Gecko, his name is. Seth and Richard Gecko are Clooney and Tarantino, respectively. But yeah, I think the twist where the vampires are revealed is pretty interesting. It's Salma Hayek, who's a exotic dancer at the Titty Twister comes out and does like a dance in front of Tarantino where she puts her foot in his mouth and he drinks like whiskey off it. And it's like,
I was like, why did you take the rapist character? And then you watch that scene, you're like, that's why you played that character.
And it's so funny where like this would have been back when Tarantino's foot fetish probably wasn't as widely publicized. So you could maybe forgive
when do you, when do you reckon that day. Really came into the Kill Bill?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, where it became, people started to notice it as a pointless recurring theme in his works. And so, and then you fast forward to Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, where he's just like flagrantly putting it out there because there's so many foot shots in that movie.
Also, I've shared this on the Discord and stuff, but my fan theory for Tarantino's new fetish, or not necessarily fetish, but I reckon his wife snores. If you watch Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, there's like two beautiful, separate beautiful women in that movie who snore when they're sleeping. And I reckon Tarantino's, because that's his first film since he's been married. And I reckon that's like a new little trait that he thinks is like a quirky little cute thing to give to like humanizing a beautiful woman. And I think that's why, because it's like, why would you do it twice in the same movie?
Yeah. And I think that's funny now that, like, people who don't really know who Tarantino is know he has a foot fetish. You know? Yeah. Like, and now it's a TikTok joke that he has a foot fetish, you know? And so then you go back to 1996 and watch a movie that he wrote where he puts Salma Hayek's foot in his mouth. And it's like, it doesn't read as like much as like a writer just, you know, writing what's best for the story anymore. It starts to feel like something he really wanted to happen.
Or do you reckon that was in the script, or that was Robert Rodriguez on set being like, I got you, bro?
I don't know. We could probably find out. Maybe there's a script is probably online somewhere. So yeah, and then Salma Hayek turns into a vampire and kills him, which was great. I'm glad. No, like, as soon as I started to get an idea of what kind of character Richard Gecko was, Tarantino's character, I was like, this is going to be the guy that dies first. Or he's going to end up a vampire and be the big bad. Like they are making him so hateable that he's going to die in some, like, bombastic way. And, yeah, that he's the first to go, basically. What did you think of the design of the vampires?
It's interesting. Yeah, they're not there's something else they look real similar to.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
I'm not familiar. Like, they're almost like Skrulls, really.
They are very heavily done up with makeup and prosthetics in a way which kind of disappointed me, because I was like, some sharp fangs is like all you need for a really kind of classy movie. And with a lot of these monster movies and stuff, I always find myself much more preferring the simplicity as opposed to these extravagant prosthetic effects. I'm reminded of a rather obscure TV show that I loved when I was 10 called Big Wolf on Campus.
Fuck yeah, man.
The main character was a werewolf, and in the first few episodes...
And his friend liked a post we made on Instagram once, Danny Martin.
The actor.
Who sings the theme song.
Yeah, yeah. And in the first few episodes of Big Wolf on Campus, the main character, the werewolf makeup was this really extreme, and it looked like shit, looked horrible, made him look unrelatable. And apparently the actor had an allergic reaction to it, and so they made it this real simple, like he kind of grows his sideburns out, has yellow eyes and teeth, and it looks so cool.
It was Brandon someone, right?
Yeah, Brandon Routh.
Yeah.
That's not Brad Rowe.
It's not Brad Rowe.
Did you say Danny Martin was the guy?
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Danny Smith, sorry.
Smith, yeah.
Yeah, Brandon Quinn. Maybe I think of the fact that his character's name was Merton J. Dingle.
Merton J. Dingle, yes. Yeah. And so if you haven't seen From Dusk Till Dawn, the vampires look like early Big Wolf on Campus design for Tommy Dawkins. And I don't know, I just thought that it wasn't It was a bummer, because it's dated worse now because of it, I think. But at the same time, Robert Kurtzman, who we'll talk about in a bit, who's a famous special effects makeup artist, was like the figurehead behind this whole project. And so, of course, you're going to, you know, get extravagant effects going on.
Yeah, and because, like, and Tom Savini plays like a character in it, like he's a reasonably main character. Tom Savini's like another famous special effects wizard.
Oh, is he? I didn't know that.
Yeah,
that's funny.
He did all the special effects for Friday the 13th. So the he was the one blowing the blood out from when Kevin Bacon gets stabbed in the throat. He's quite a big deal in the world of these kind of things.
Mm.
And I think is Greg Nicotero in it as well?
I think, do you think they started to believe in vampires too easily? Like, they don't, there's no setup for it. There's no, like, they don't talk about vampires earlier in the movie. It's just a, like, this one, I said how they're all some other movie pretending to be, they're all vampire movies pretending to be, this is like a crime caper, like a real, like, Pulp Fiction-esque kind of, like, grisly crime caper that ends up being a vampire movie. And then when the vampires show up, there's not a moment where someone, they don't, I felt like I needed a moment where someone's in disbelief and someone's like, these are vampires. Like, vampires,
I found that refreshing. You know how I feel about movies that characters that take too long to work things out.
They don't need to take too long, but they need to take some time to vampires not even being mentioned in the text.
If someone
we're fighting vampires
turns into a vampire, like, because they are familiar with the concept of vampires, right? Like, they're not like, they want to suck blood and they got fangs. Oh, you know, like they're familiar with the concept of, like, because it's like a common trope in zombie movies that no other zombie fiction exists. Whereas I don't think that's the case here. Like, they're able to identify these as vampires. And I think in real life, if someone transformed like that in front of me and tried to suck my blood and said, "Blur, I'm from Transylvania," I would understand them as a vampire.
Okay. Maybe I missed that scene. Cheech Marin plays three different roles in this movie, which is pretty funny, especially because he played three different roles across El Mariachi trilogy. Danny Trejo is also in the movie and the only actor to appear in all three films in the trilogy, which also makes him our eighth most watched actor for the podcast, having appeared in 14 other films across five other franchises, including Spy Kids / Machete, Desperado, The Muppets, Halloween, and Harold and Kumar, and six if you count his role in the latest American Pie film, which we exclusively covered on Patreon.
Yeah. Although if we're going just off, if we're only counting like times we've seen people, he's second.
Oh. Mm. Who's first?
Kelly Sheridan. Desmond Lawrence first.
Right.
I was like, yeah, we're sorry. But yeah, we've got a bunch of Desmond Llewellyn. Between him and Danny Trejo is Dave Goals, who's, I believe, Gonzo. So he's a bunch of Muppet movies. But then he was also randomly in An American Werewolf in London.
If anyone is curious, I would say the most famous person who is the top of the list is Sylvester Stallone. We've seen, I think, 13 films with him in it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But that would be a recent record, I guess, because Rocky would have really beefed those numbers up.
Yeah, and Antonio Banderas is in behind at 12.
Nice. We recently renewed our Letterboxd Pro subscription. As by recently, I mean about 2 hours ago in preparation for these stats. So originally this film was conceived by Robert Kurtzman, who I said before is the sort of famous, you know, big swinging dick in the special effects makeup world. And he hired Tarantino to write the script. He paid him $1,500 to write the script. And this was Tarantino's first screenplay gig. And initially Universal wanted From Dusk Till Dawn to be a sequel in and of itself to Tales from the Crypt Presents Demon Night, which was an anthology film series based off the anthology TV show Tales from the Crypt. While From Dusk Till Dawn became its own thing, there was a 1996 vampiric sequel to Demon Night called Tales from the Crypt Bordello of Blood. So that's a fun little occurrence. I've got some dumb IMDb trivia. This is, of course, if you go on IMDb and look at the trivia section, it's all user submitted, so it's often poorly written and real stupid. And here are some pieces of dumb IMDb trivia for From Dusk Till Dawn. Beginning with maybe we could go to Problematic Corner for this. Maybe we could. It's not like these movies aren't problematic. Like, they're very male gazy. It's mostly set in a titty bar. So shall we say it? So within dumb IMDb trivia, I've got a problematic corner thing.
All right. Here we go.
Ooh, I bet this didn't age well. Let's get a laugh at someone else's expense. I have to warn you, this might get obscene. This the problematic corner wearing nothing PC.
Okay, there it is. Thank you so much, Carlisle, for the theme song for Problematic Corner, a section I guess we'll be looking to include more stuff in now. To include,
we don't have to
that theme song. Okay, so
we need a dumb IMDb trivia. Like, it would have been better to get a dumb IMDb trivia theme song than a Problematic Corner one.
Yeah, that's true. or continue the franchise or any of the segments.
Carlisle, want another $50 if you're listening?
Feature a lot more than Problematic Corner. Mm. All right, here it is. Salma Hayek has a real fear of snakes and had always refused to be near them. Naturally, when she read the script for From Dusk Till Dawn, in which her character is holding a snake, she knew her phobia would prevent her from taking the part. Robert Rodriguez conned her into thinking that Madonna was ready to nab the part instead, so Hayek spent 2 months with therapists to overcome her fear. Which is the second instance of behind-the-scenes Robert Rodriguez trivia we've found where he tricked Salma Hayek into doing something she was uncomfortable with on camera. The first one being a sex scene Desperado.
But also, like, this was after Desperado, so she was obviously, you know, like, came back for this.
Mm, I guess so. But that doesn't necessarily mean she's not being manipulated.
Halfway through, like, I was like, ugh.
Well, I'm not. I was here going to hear you out.
Sorry, and that's it. Salma, if you're listening.
That's the problematic thing. So I hope the theme song is probably the best part of that whole section.
Yeah.
We got more Dharma IMDb trivia though. The humorous line. Before Salma Hayek's character dies, she tells George Clooney that she's going to make him her slave, and he drops a chandelier on her and says, "No thanks, I've already had a wife." The humorous line, "No thanks, I've already had a wife," was improvised by George Clooney. Director Robert Rodriguez never intended it to be in the final cut, but after the studio included the line in a trailer, he felt obligated to include it in the film. And I know how Robert Rodriguez feels here, because George Clooney's character's wife isn't part of, like, I feel like that joke would work a lot better if you knew he had an ex-wife, you know? But, yeah. Like, that's the first you hear of it.
But at the same time, this actually reveals something really interesting about the film, because that scene is after Salma Hayek's transformed into a vampire. Mm. And if that was in a trailer, then this isn't the, it was hidden from all the marketing kind of thing that we're told it was. If you Google From Dusk Till Dawn trailer, the first video that comes up, it might be the second, is the thumbnail is Salma Hayek transformed. I don't think this actually was kept out of the marketing as much as you're led to believe. Because it is this midway through the film twist. But, yeah. I mean, I didn't actually watch the trailer to fact check it. But, because I was talking to someone today, shout out Whittemore if you're listening, about From Dusk Till Dawn, and he was saying about how it's like one of the film going experiences he's most jealous of is 1996 sitting in From Dusk Till Dawn and not knowing what was coming. Like, that would have been mind-blowing kind of thing.
It's sort of like the War of the Worlds created hysteria thing. That's probably not,
it's just apocryphal. That? Yeah.
I'm watching the trailer now.
Fun word for you.
Thank you so much for that fun word. Apocryphal. I'm watching the trailer on mute. It's mostly just Tarantino and Clooney with guns. I'll skip through it a little bit. Right, they're in the bar.
Joe, I've actually been, all week I've been thinking, how can I drop the word apocryphal into the podcast? And I can't believe
there's vampires in the trailer.
Yeah.
There's vampires in the trailer. What's the fucking point? What's the fucking point?
But yeah, that is really interesting. That it's like, yeah, that it wasn't actually this thing. But it is one of those things.
It's
that's
so
like,
fucking apocryphal. God.
It is. But it's like, why would you, like, it's one of those movies that's like, without the twist, why would you watch it? Like, the twist is the most interesting thing about it.
Okay, it's the most interesting thing about it when you hear it on paper. I quite liked I probably preferred the first half before it went into, like, there's not an interesting movie about criminals.
But I'd say the twist is the most interesting thing about it.
Yeah.
But it is, like, it's fairly generic apart from that, is what I say. Mm. Like, I mean, why would you watch it? I mean, people watch all kinds of stupid shit, but...
People watch fucking Two Girls, One Cup. And it's
people,
like,
listen to this podcast.
I've seen it. speaking of apocryphy, Richard, which is all dumb IMDb trivia often is, Quentin Tarantino originally gave the script to makeup effects technician Robert Kurtzman to direct. When he couldn't commit, Tarantino showed the script to Robert Rodriguez, who eagerly signed on. That's just straight up not what happened, my dude. That's like Robert Kurtzman created the idea. It was George Clooney's idea for Seth, his character, to have a tattoo, having just seen Once Were Warriors. Huh. Now, yes, later on we will talk about how the star of Once Warriors is in a later film in this trilogy, but also like he had the idea for his character to have a tattoo after seeing a movie. It's like they didn't invent having tattoos. And oh, here we go. Tom Savini really knew how to use a whip. This is obvious when viewing the movie.
Only if you know who Tom Savini is.
Not apocryphal, just stupidly worded. And the final dumb piece of dumb IMDb trivia here. This marks the first time in a film scripted by Quentin Tarantino and that Harvey Keitel co-stars with him that they're on opposite sides of the law. In Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction, they were both criminals. In this film, Tarantino is a criminal and Keitel is a former preacher, although he still wears the clothes and a hat. Incidentally, they both wear glasses in the film.
I love that.
Is this a spiritual sequel to our famous Toy Story 2 dumb IMDb? They still wear clothes and a hat. And incidentally, they both wear glasses. What? I want to die in a world where that's considered trivia, where two characters wearing glasses. Well, it's only going to get worse from here, Richard, because we're now delving into the weird and wonderful world of straight-to-DVD sequels with From Dusk Till Dawn 2, Texas Blood Money from 1999. And my only wish is that this movie would have actually been called From Dusk Till Dawn 2, Texas Blood Money 1999. Like 1999 being part of the title. It just sounds funny. This was directed by Scott Spiegel, who's shown up and will, I think, probably show up in a coming franchise before. Do you recognize that name?
He's the rooftop pizza thief in Spider-Man 2.
Is he really?
Yeah,
is that Scott Spiegel? Yeah. That makes a lot of sense because he's also one of the writers on Evil Dead 2. And I think he wrote a Phantasm movie? No. Guess we'll find out. Or we won't find out, depending on where the Patreon votes are. Where do you think this lies on Rotten Tomatoes?
I do know. I believe it's in the single digits, right?
Correct.
9.
You'll never guess now. Could be any of them. It's 9% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Pause for applause.
And you know what the thing is? I was taking a drink, but then my next note is like asking you what the movie's about. I could have taken a drink. What's this movie about?
Well, this movie's about...
What are you drinking?
No, I'm actually not drinking anything. It's an empty can.
Oh, you got me.
I got you! 2 years of acting training. So this is a heist movie. Five criminals gather to pull off a bank heist, but they soon realize they're up against far more frightening creatures than the police pursuing them. This one starts Mexican heist movie. Tuco is in it from Breaking Bad, and the T-1000 from Terminator.
Robert Patrick.
Is he T-1000? Is that the right one? The right model?
I don't fucking know, dude.
T-1-2-3. Yeah, that's him. Yeah. So there you go. Yeah, so they stumble across the titty twister where they're just when they thought they were out, they're pulled back in to a world of vampires.
Yeah. And what did you think of this movie?
These two are bad. Like, I'm sorry, there's no way around it. I know you loved them.
Fuck off, I didn't love them.
We should have. I don't even like them.
I don't even like her.
they are like they're very low quality. They have that same kind of like telenovela look to them. Where it's like very very flat kind of direction. But then at the same time, actually, one of the things I liked about it is that they are kind of creative with their direction.
I agree.
Direction in parts. That like a lot of use of like POV shots and stuff like that. But it's like. Yeah, it'll be this like really flatly lit scene. Yeah, like no depth of field, anything, and then they just have a chat. And then it's like, this is what the inside of the phone looks like. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that the best thing I could say about this film is that there is an effort to keep some of the Rodriguez flavor in how it's presented. Like, there's a really cool shot where Tuco from Breaking Bad is getting attacked by a vampire, and the camera is from inside the vampire's mouth, so the sharp teeth, like, border the frame. And stuff which is very cheesy, but not cool.
Yeah.
You know? It's full of stuff like that. It has stuff like that. It's certainly not full of stuff like that.
It's peppered with stuff like that.
Yeah. When I thought the setup was interesting, making it like, you know, these criminals getting back in the game, and then I do like the idea of a heist movie where they get bit by vampires during the heist and that becomes what it's about.
Yeah, that's their big picked off one by one kind of thing.
Yeah, but when it got down to it, I found it insanely mind-numbing to keep watching. Just like nothing happening. And yeah, so there's a pretty fun sequence with police fighting the vampires at the end, which goes on for ages and hilariously is prolonged because of an eclipse, which I can't tell if that's funny or just bad lazy screenwriting that the eclipse happens, which lets them extend the dawn, you know, and so the vampires can attack. I also thought that the film uses a lot of bats that look really funny. They haven't got a good enough of, like, you know, budget to make bats look scary, and so it's a lot of puppets flying around. It's batshit.
Batshit is the new Buck Wild. I thought this was batshit crazy.
No, not even crazy. Just batshit. It's like calling something dog shit. It's just a little crazier than dog shit.
Is batshit a little crazier than dog shit? I guess it is.
Well, because of batshit insane.
Right, yeah.
If something's just batshit.
Well, but I guess also, I mean, you know, speaking from New Zealand.
To each their own.
Speaking from New Zealand, if I saw batshit, I'd be like, damn, that's out of place. If I saw dog shit, I'd be like, it's where dog shit belongs, you know? Exactly. We don't really have bats in New Zealand, so.
It's called guano.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Batshit. There's a scene that's a very clear rip-off of Psycho.
Where
a woman gets killed in a shower by a bat, and it looks very silly, and is one of those things where you watch the film and you're like, you shouldn't have gone for this. Sorry.
We have two types of bats in New Zealand.
Scott Spiegel. Picker, yeah, I thought we did.
Yeah. Long-tailed bat and the lesser short-tailed bat. It's good. It's not enough that your tail's shorter. They actually call you lesser.
It's not about size, all right? It's how you use the tail.
It is.
Doesn't make me lesser. I may be a lesser short-tailed bat, but it does not make me a lesser bat.
I'm not a lesser bat, yeah.
I think... there's a lot of this. So a lot of this film is just characters watching porn in a hotel room, complaining that there isn't enough story, which is pretty funny for a movie with not a lot of story. And this felt like an attempt at some kind of Tarantino-esque dialogue scene.
Yeah, yeah, like you know? Like a virgin kind of thing.
Yeah, 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 exactly. The film is apparently a prequel. Or at least the Wikipedia page for the first film refers to both 2 and 3 as prequels, and that's the only place I can find it referred to as a prequel. I agree with you, it's silly, but I thought I'd dive into this because there's not a lot else to talk about.
So that's on the page for the original
film. If you go down to sequels, it says the film has 2 prequels. 3 is obviously a prequel, no arguments there, but 2 is a little more vague. I thought maybe it was considered a prequel because Danny Trejo's character is in this one as well, and his character, whose name is Razor Charlie, dies in the first film, so I thought this is a prequel because he's alive. But apparently, this character in From Dusk Till Dawn 2 is Razor Charlie's twin brother, Razor Eddie.
That's so, Robert Rodriguez.
So I don't think it is a prequel, putting that tiny sliver of a rumor to bed.
Mm. Oh, Bruce Campbell's in this movie as well.
Yeah, he's in the opening scene.
And Tiffany Thiessen as well.
Which makes this our 9th film to feature Bruce Campbell, and our 4th franchise after various cameos in the Spider-Man trilogy, and then, of course, the Evil Dead films and that one Herbie movie. But interestingly, I thought of these 9 appearances, 5 of them are cameos. Yeah. So he's really playing the quick and fast game to get his numbers up in our franchises.
Yeah.
Because, like, he even has a cameo in an Evil Dead movie.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah.
Yeah, do you have anything else to say about From Dusk Till Dawn, Texas Blood?
There's one sex scene that's very aggressive.
Oh, you think? You reckon?
That's how I do it.
What?
No, the way you were like, oh, you reckon that was aggressive? Like, it was very like, oh, you call that aggressive?
You were being me.
Yeah, I was being you. So it's I don't know much to say about it, but it's just a very like, it's like if you programmed a humping robot, it would look like Raymond Cruz in that scene. It's just very like, like a very solid rhythm, and it's like fully compressing the entire bed. It's like if you were to do like a Looney Tunes like stretch and squash style animation of two people having sex, but you could only make like 3 frames and just repeat them, that's what it would look like.
Interesting. I was to understand that's what sex looked like anyway. Thank you for not laughing at my joke, Richard. Very helpful.
You're like, got him. You got me by
From Dusk Till Dawn 3, The Hangman's Daughter, came out in 2000. A lot of places said it came out as well in 1999. And I was going to do this big thing about, isn't that interesting that these 2 sequels came out? Apparently, it's just wrong in a bunch of places.
It played at a film festival and on Halloween 1999.
Right.
Some places, often do that where they call it that.
This was directed by PJ Pesci, who also directed Sniper 3, Lost Boys, The Tribe, and Smoke and Aces 2, Assassin's Ball. So there is a chance we may see him again in the future if any of those franchises ever win. Do you know what this has on Rotten Tomatoes?
He also did the soundtrack for Spy Kids.
Oh.
Apparently.
Wow, there you go. Do you know what this has on Rotten Tomatoes?
I don't, actually. I'm going to guess it's quite low, though. Or doesn't have one.
Oh, it doesn't have one. Are you going for that?
Yes.
It has one, you idiot! Ugh. You fucking fool! I led you right into my trap, and I'm a vampire! I'm a vampire that feeds off you being wrong.
I believe you, immediately. I believe you. I still win from earlier.
This has 22% on Rotten Tomatoes. Do you want to tell me what it's about? Because I couldn't. No, I'm just kidding.
So this is actually a sequel. No, this one's definitely a prequel. It's set 100 years before the events of the first one, I believe, or roughly. It's set early 1900s. Yeah, the dude escapes from the gallows, kidnaps the hangman's beautiful daughter, Esmeralda, teams up with a couple other people, and they seek shelter in a brothel, which is run by vampires. And Esmeralda is actually revealed to be a vampire herself.
Well, she gets bit. She's the daughter of the vampire
princess,
queen.
Yeah.
The brothel they stay at, by the way, is still the Titty Twister.
Yeah, it's just called a different
thing. Devil's Nipple is what it's called. So it's sort of presented as a prequel story for Satanico Pandemonium, which is Salma Hayek's character. So I think the implication is that the hangman's daughter is Salma Hayek.
Right.
But that, I don't know if that's what it was meaning or not. This one's a Western. This one's a Western that's actually a vampire movie. What did you think of this?
I like the idea of it more than I like it.
That's a great way to say it. That's a great thing to say about literally every film in this franchise.
Yeah. It is the idea of doing a third Dusk Till Dawn film that's like takes the same layout. It's like, let's do a film and make it, you know, one type of film before it changes to a vampire movie. And it's like, yeah, do that with a period piece. Like, that's an interesting way to take it and to show the origin of the titty twister and all this. But
Titty Twister's origins.
Yeah, it is.
The series should have been called Titty Twisters.
But I did, found myself pretty bored for most of the film, to be honest.
I paid unusual attention to it because the only way I could end up watching it was on my phone because my
laptop's you can't distract yourself.
Too shit. Yeah, exactly. I didn't think this one was that bad.
That's the thing. Like, that's the thing. Hey. Yeah, I paid unusually little attention to it.
Right.
Because the only way I could watch it was while I was waiting for Far Cry 6 to transfer onto my PS5. My mind was elsewhere.
I'd probably regard this as one of the more promising straight to DVD sequels we've ever seen out of all the many that we have seen. I think with a higher budget and probably better actors involved, it could probably stand on its own. It could be its own thing.
I'd say it rises above the second one just in the interestingness of doing it.
Yeah, it's very interesting. What are your thoughts on the cast and characters? There's Michael Parks plays real life author who went missing or went to go join the revolution, Ambrose Bierce, in this movie. He's not really the main character, but he's kind of like the narrative backbone of the story. And he looked so much like Bryan Cranston, but 2021 Bryan Cranston, not 2000 Bryan Cranston. And the only reason I didn't check to see if it was actually Bryan Cranston, because I was like, he would not look like this in the year. But it's Michael Parks.
Yeah,
who was also in the first one, actually.
Double check. Like, did I pick up on him looking like Bryan Cranston? I'm just gonna look for a photo of him.
Like specifically in this movie. I don't know.
Yeah, I get what you mean. Yeah.
And so he's sort of this part of the story.
Pick up on that, but now looking at him, it's like, totally.
And he's like this drunk old man who's escaped America to join a revolution. It's just this interesting idea where it's like, you don't often see, and this is sort of my whole thesis on From Dusk Till Dawn 3, The Hangman's Daughter, is it's just like a lot of ideas that you don't typically see in straight-to-DVD movies. Texas Blood Money is a movie that's trying to copy what was good about the first one, knowing it's shitter and knowing it's not going to do as well. This feels like a passion project that didn't get fully funded. Like, there's lore and there's ideas and there's world building in it that just isn't very good because of the amount of money they were given. But it's still in there, you know?
Yeah, I feel you. Yeah, there's more love put into this one.
Yeah, Temuera Morrison is also put into this one. Our national pride. This is a joke because I think Temuera Morrison is mostly a bad actor in mostly everything he's in. He is the titular hangman, making his second appearance in a straight-to-DVD sequel this year after The Scorpion King 3 Battle for Redemption. And he's putting on a very subtle abstract accent, which doesn't quite take him out of New Zealand, but doesn't really place him anywhere else. And there's also a scene where he makes out with his titular recently turned vampire daughter. So I thought that was weird.
And it's fucking hot.
What do you think of Temuera Morrison in this film? Do you think
you say what you will about Tim, but he gives, he's a consistent performer, whether he's in From Dusk Till Dawn 3 or Scorpion King 4 or whatever it was.
He's
just as bad as he is in Star Wars.
And this is the guy that's getting his own series directed by Robert Rodriguez coming out this year.
This is the guy famous for his tattoo in Once Were Warriors.
It is. I feel like he straddles the line between him and Ron Perlman are two actors where when they're cast in something, people are like, oh my God, they got them. And it's like, these guys were in so many straight to
Scorpion King. Is Ron Perlman? Yeah. Ron Perlman's in it. He's in Scorpion King 2, right?
I know he's in Scorpion King 4.
Right.
But with, he's like,
what's his face? Lou Ferrigno.
Yeah. He was recently cast as Optimus Primal in the Beast Wars Transformers movie. And it's like, okay, I don't think he's very expensive. I don't think he's a hard get.
He's a good actor. Ron Perlman. Ron Perlman's cool, but...
he'll do a Scorpion King sequel, you know? You're not going to get, like, Hugo Weaving doing a Scorpion King sequel.
I reckon, like, if I was, like, Brad Pitt's level of fame, say, I would, like, once a year be like, I'm available for the shit... Put me in the shittiest fucking movie, I don't care.
Right.
You know? Like, I would do a Dusk Till Dawn 7 or, like, a like some shitty Hallmark Christmas movie. It's like... Make it known I'm available for one day of the year and I'll appear. I don't care what it is. Your student film, I'll do it.
That's essentially what Samuel Jackson did with Snakes on a Plane.
Yeah.
Like that whole movie like was elevated above usual Z grade tier because he signed on to it.
Yeah. But that would just be like, I would find that so fun if I had that that level of clout. Too bad I never will.
I'll appear on one podcast, anyone's podcast.
Yeah.
I've got one piece of dumb IMDb trivia for this film. On IMDb, it says under the spoiler section, at 38 minutes, we recognize the facade of the future Titty Twister bar.
I didn't recognize it.
Yeah, you didn't even know. I couldn't confirm this, but a lot of this film feels like it would have started its life as an unrelated movie that was then like, just make it a From Dusk Till Dawn sequel. You'll get funding for it.
Yeah.
And as I said before, I wouldn't say I particularly enjoyed it as much as I'm surprised that it was this original story and it wasn't just a poor man's version of the original movie. And I think a lot of that comes down to Robert Rodriguez actually having some involvement in the story. He's credited as coming up with the story along with his cousin, Alvaro Rodriguez, who is also credited with coming up with the story and writing the screenplay.
I was wondering if there was a relation there, yeah.
Yeah, because when the credits started rolling and I was like, that wasn't entirely awful. And then Alvaro Rodriguez came up. I was like, okay, I see what's happening here.
What?
But Richard, let me have a clue. let me pitch you this. Is From Dusk Till Dawn 3, The Hangman's Daughter, secretly a really good blueprint for a prequel? Is this the best prequel? Before you answer, remember how many bad prequels there are. Because I thought it was interesting that it uses familiar imagery and themes and set inside the same fictional universe. All of that stands up to, you know, to... yeah, it's definitely related. But because it's a different time period and new characters, we don't know who lives or dies. The only character who returns from a previous movie is Razor Charlie, Danny Trejo's character, who, if anything, promises the main characters won't survive the night because we know he's alive. So, like, usually the problem with a prequel is, like, you know this character is going to survive the movie because they're in the one that's set after it. But in this, it's like a villainous character is still alive in this one and isn't a central focus. And so, if anything, that creates more stakes, I guess. You know? I don't know. I thought it worked well as a prequel despite not being a good movie.
I think doing it, like it's a prequel. Yeah, I think maybe what you're saying, the blueprint for a good prequel is to prequelize like the setting rather than the characters. I think maybe that's what works. Like take something about the world and look at when the world was created, not the character's previous adventure, you know?
Yeah, man. We're going to bring this to Hollywood, get them to make some good prequels for us.
What is one that you can make a prequel to and do and use this blueprint?
I can only think of Monsters, Inc. because that's the first prequel that comes to mind. But that's, like, anything with a rich world. An example that I'm worried about is Furiosa, the Mad Max Fury Road prequel about Furiosa. It's like, I'll take a prequel set in the world of Fury Road, but one about this character that I know will survive. You know, that's what concerns me. I guess I was just impressed that this film and the trilogy as a whole is nothing special. Even the first one's nothing special. But I love the blueprint of taking a central concept and exploring it in sequels with different genres and time eras, which is something we've only seen with Fear Street very recently, but is like so often what I think should, like, that's so often our continue the franchise. That's so often, like, see, you know, like there's those rumors of the, I think it's more than rumors, I think it's confirmed, the Predator movie that's coming out that's set in Frontiers times. And it's like, yeah, man, every horror franchise should be doing that.
Yeah, yeah.
Do a colonial Final Destination, you know?
Rather than having your fucking main character's boyfriend drop your phone in custard so that you can't use your phone. It's like, just set it in colonial times, Halloween 2018. Come on.
Yeah, so that is the trilogy. So we talk about titles a lot on this podcast.
We do.
And before we get to what we all thought of the titles, what we all of us, all two of us.
Leave your comments below.
I thought it was interesting that the franchise in Brazil is called A Drink in Hell.
That's cool.
What do you think about From Dusk Till Dawn as a title?
It's interesting. So, because what it says on the titty twister, and I'm just going to quickly Google.
It says open dusk till dawn.
Yeah, and I kind of had an issue with that. I think
that it doesn't have the word from.
Well, it's like, yeah, that doesn't have the word from, or like call the movie just Dusk Till Dawn or Open Dusk Till Dawn. That it's like, yeah, you have most of a title bomb in the film, but not really.
I do think From Dusk Till Dawn is the best combination of those words, though. It's more, I wish the movie wrote that on the side.
Well, you could call it Dusk Till Dawn.
I think From Dusk Till Dawn is better, though, because that tells you this is a story which takes place overnight, you know? Like, it almost adds a ticking clock to the concept, whereas Dusk Till Dawn is just night as a concept.
Right, okay, yeah.
Hmm. What do you think of Texas That's Blood not- Money and The Hangman's Daughter?
I kind of like that they're like fairly generic titles.
Yeah.
Like Texas Blood Money is like, it's just like, this is a heist movie. The Hangman's Daughter is like, oh, this is a saucy Western. and it's like, yeah, I kind of like that that's their pattern, is it's like still burying the lead of the vampire movie.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, good point. Yeah, that's cool. Awesome. Well, hey, Richard. Yeah, they're fine. No. I really like From Dusk Till Dawn as a moniker. I could give or take the title, but that's a good I don't know, going out to, what do you call it? Good praise of them, what you just did. What you defense. Just did. Defense. Continue the franchise, Richard. This is our famous segment where we
one that doesn't have a theme song.
Yeah, probably our oldest segment and the only one that doesn't have a theme song.
It's not probably our oldest segment. This is definitely our oldest segment.
Yeah, yeah. So this is a segment
this podcast could have been called Continue the Franchise at one point.
Yeah, I agree.
Not really. Well, I mean, not we didn't really seriously talk about it, but we did say we should call it this because we should have called it this because that's what we do. That's the hook.
I think Franchise Roulette would have been the better title for the podcast.
Than better than Film Franchise Walnuts?
No, not necessarily. But if we were going to name it.
Better than Cult Pop Shit?
If we were going to name it after one of the segments, I think Franchise Roulette, while now being outdated, because it's not always the way we decide, would have conveyed the idea more.
What about we talk about titles a lot on this podcast?
Wouldn't have worked. Would never have worked. This is a segment where we pitch a sequel or a continuation.
We just call the podcast Problematic Corner. Like, I wouldn't want the fans we would get from that.
So, in terms of continuations already, From Dusk Till Dawn has got a couple of notable non-film follow-ups, including a 2001 PC game, which is a sequel to the original film, which is just titled From Dusk Till Dawn, in which you play as Seth Gecko, who is now incarcerated on a floating tanker-turned-prison off the coast of New Orleans, which then becomes infiltrated with vampires. So, like, a completely original story that's a sequel that actually came out after the third one. Like, you know, exists out there, and it looks kind of interesting. There's also a pretty interesting looking documentary about the making of the original film. It came out in 1997. It's called Full Tilt Boogie, which interestingly has a higher Rotten Tomatoes score than any of the actual films, with 88%.
Yeah, that's it's not uncommon, I don't think. Actually.
Yeah. But probably one of the most well-known of all the continuations for the series was the TV series Remake, which ran for three seasons between 2014 and 2016, though was technically never cancelled. The actors were just let go of their contracts and they never cancelled
it. It's a Netflix original internationally. Mm. And I tell you what, AJ, I watched it.
You watched the whole thing?
Nah, fuck no. We at the start of the, because you're looking to see on streaming services if From Dusk Till Dawn is on any of them. Before remembering, I have From Dusk Till Dawn on DVD. It came up with a series and I sent you that it was on Netflix. It was like, one of us is going to have to.
Set a dangerous precedent of watching the TV show.
After Evangelion, yeah.
Mm. But you didn't watch it?
No, not even a little bit. What didn't even cross my mind?
I nearly watched the first episode, but then I didn't. It expands upon the story of the original film and includes all the main characters who are recast and remolded. I think Tarantino's character is just like a reckless person now and not like a sex offender. Mm. Danny Trejo shows up in season two, but in what is probably the more interesting casting decision, Robert Patrick, star of From Dusk Till Dawn 2, Texas Blood Money, plays Jacob Fuller, who's Harvey Keitel's character from the original movie. That's cool. So that's kind of, you know, one of those things is probably, he probably wasn't cast because he was in the sequel. It's just, he landed two separate roles where he plays two pretty important characters. Are you going to watch the show?
No.
Okay, well, spoilers for the show. when looking on the Wikipedia page for this, it has one of those neat little Wikipedia tables where it has like all the cast members and then it's like blocked out who they play in each season sort of thing. And Robert Patrick's one is only in season one of three. So I think he dies. I think that's what happens to the character.
One other interesting thing, like a very tangential thing, but the joked about title for a sequel to Shaun of the Dead is From Dusk Till Shaun, which actually shows up in Into the Spider-Verse in the alternate universe that has like the Coca-Cola logos. It's a different brand, but it's like all these brands that are like similar to ours, but not quite. It has a poster for From Dusk Till Shaun.
There you go. I remember reading about that before I knew what From Dusk Till Dawn was.
Mm. And that'd be great. Like, that's a great idea. Just in the last couple of days, Edgar Wright has said, no, I'm probably not going to do a sequel to probably not going to do a sequel to Shaun of the Dead. Essentially saying, like, people always say, like, hey, just pop one out. It's like, that would take 3 years of my life. I would have to be really passionate about it. Like, movies are hard to make. Mm. But, like, if you were going to do a sequel to Shaun of the Dead, that would be a great way to do it. That it's like, you just take the same cast of characters. How would they deal with vampires?
Like, the, you know? Is this your Continue the Franchise is pitching a sequel to Shaun of the Dead?
Yeah. What do you think of that idea for a continuation of the Shaun of the Dead?
Yeah, and no, I think it's a good idea.
They'll make it like an anthology film that you just reset the timeline, but they're just faced with a different monster of the week.
Yeah, that's good. After all that's been said and done, though, Richard, there's not a lot left for us to pitch because a TV show, a video game, and sequels set in different time periods is all of my bag of tricks. Those are all my old reliables.
Wikipedia also lists a cancelled fourth film. I don't know if you were going to mention that. But
I think that's just a Wikipedia, someone on Wikipedia being hopeful.
Hmm.
Couldn't find it. What
do you not have? Do you not have a continuing
franchise? I do.
Sorry, I interrupted your segue, didn't I?
No, it's fine. I didn't. It wasn't a segue.
It's okay. Just continue.
Okay. I mean, I'm pitching a Christmas movie. It's called From Dusk Till Dawn, Jingle Hell, in which Santa delivers presents to the Titty Twister bar and must fight off a bunch of vampires and escape so he can deliver the rest of the presents before dawn.
Nice. That's good. Yeah, nice using From Dusk Till Dawn. You might be able to hear, but I don't know if you can hear it on the, probably not on the recording, but my cats are going fucking buck wild scratching at the door.
Going batshit.
My Continue the Franchise is, I don't have 100% have a title, but it'll be called something along the lines of like From Dusk Till Dawn, Deep Space Nine.
Right, like a future set one.
Yeah, it's a future set one on a spaceship. The SS Titty Twitter.
Yeah.
Titty Twister.
Right, I was going to say Titty
Twister. But it would have some generic sci-fi subtitle, but yeah, like do a vampires are revealed to be on the ship halfway through.
Halfway through a sci-fi, that's cool. I really like that. Nice.
And yeah, you had like another time period. But yeah, because the Hangman's Daughter ends with like the Aztec temple or whatever, like that the Titty Twister is built upon that we see at the end of the first film. And it's like you're doing that, like, but it's a whole it's a spaceship.
That's great. Hey, well, that brings us to one of our final segments, which is, of course, our favorite section segment.
I forgot about this.
Rank Dat Franchise, where we rank our franchises. We have covered 137.
Too fucking many, to be honest.
This is our 138th franchise that we've covered on the show.
The spookiest number.
We've recently this segment has recently come under fire, Richard, by us because
for being shit.
But you know what? I'm coming around to it. I'm coming back. I'm like, you know, maybe it's important that we have some kind of cool integration with Letterboxd in our, you know, and I mean renewed our subscription to Pro and seeing all our stats, I'm like, this is fine. Like this is what we need to give this, you know, maybe we need to get back into the mindset of having rankings. Maybe it's okay.
Maybe we do.
All right. Where do you think this should be ranked?
Is this a good franchise or a bad franchise?
I think it's probably below. Is it below the Nymphomaniac Constant? I think as far as mostly straight to DVD franchises go, it's very consistent. However, I'm saying that like that makes them any of them great, which they are not. I'm thinking 116 below the Boondock Saints.
So.
Sound good? All right, so it's between the
Boondock
Saints.
Oh, no, we're above Boondock Saints.
You're going to above Boondock Saints?
It's Boondock Saints is 100% the franchise to put it next to, but I think it's better than Boondock Saints.
Well, okay, but now it's between The Search for Santa Paws and the Boondock Saints, and I'm just remembering that horrific musical number from The Search for Santa Paws, which makes me think we should put it above The Search for Santa Paws, which would actually put it next to Machete.
Oh, yeah, that's nice. You're terrible.
There you go. So two Robert Rodriguez franchises right next to each other. All right, that is it. It is officially the 114th best franchise we've ever watched. And now we're going to check what our next franchise is. What could it be? It's Spooktober. So over at patreon.com/coldpopshire, we put it up to you guys. We said, pitch a spooky franchise, whatever your interpretation of that is, and whichever one gets the most votes will be the next franchise we do. Richard, if you could tell us what that is, but first I just want to say if you enjoyed the show, then please consider following us on Twitter, following us on Instagram at @coldpopshire, at all those places. You can also find us on Patreon if you want to become a patron and dictate what we watch or at least have a say in it. You can do that over at patreon.com/coldpopshire, whereas for as little as a dollar a month, you can suggest and vote on franchises, and there's of course other rewards if you want to give us some more money. And we've also, of course, got our Discord server, which there'll be a link to in the show notes, where if you join, you get to hang out and talk about... We talk about everything in there. It's like having a...
Talk about titles.
It's like having a digital common room for your life.
Yeah.
Check that out as well. Richard, what has won the Patreon vote?
All right, so this is another hot debate for a while, and then the debate just... cooled right down. But one that was not actually a franchise that almost won and hasn't won is something called Athenian Democracy, which would be putting everything suggested into a roulette and voting for one of those. Not being chosen by us or by the fans. It would be left up to chance. A couple of ones I want to highlight. Someone suggested... Ice Age, about the horrors of climate change, but another one along the same line is An Inconvenient Truth, which has a sequel, and I thought, what a fucking fantastic suggestion. That was Tim Tarbell. But I just thought, what a beautiful, like, it was taking the silly idea of Ice Age and treating it seriously. Ice Age, also suggested by Tim. But the winning film is one that, like, it's a really strange one almost to win. It's a franchise, a five film franchise. It's called Phantasm.
They're five films. Oh yeah. My god, I thought it was a trilogy.
So it's like, it's one of the Mike Noyes suggested this, saying, vote Phantasm or the tall man and his spheres and henchmen will come for you, which I'm sure is a hilarious reference to the film.
That's the most context I've ever had.
I know nothing about Phantasm. I'd never heard of it. Like, I don't think it's on the franchise list because we fucking didn't know anything about it.
Which is why this Patreon tier exists, is so that people can suggest ones we maybe haven't heard of.
Yeah, exactly. But it's so funny to see, like, such a passionate thing. People sending GIFs of these, like, spheres that have blades sticking out of them.
Hmm.
I presume that's from Phantasm. I presume that's the spheres he's talking about.
And Mike's been pushing for Phantasm since last Spooktober, I believe.
Yeah, like, and every month in between. But it's like, okay, dude, we're going to watch them. I don't know what they are. Like, I'm excited to see why people are getting behind this so much. But
if you're disappointed that your franchise wasn't picked, remember you can just suggest spooky franchises any other time of the year. If anything, it's more just in October we restrict it to that. So cool. Well, that's our show. And stay tuned in a fortnight's time for Phantasm. In a week's time, we're going to be doing a fun little spooky off-week game, which I probably should work out exactly what the rules are before I post
so that I know how to play, because I don't fully understand it.
I'm going to come to the Discord for that, so get ready. If you're on the Discord, you can help contribute to this game. And please stay tuned for the post-credit scene, which will play after this music stops. But hey, I hope you had a spooky time, and I hope you listened to this from dusk till dawn.
It's probably not long enough.
Yeah.
Spotify lets you slow it down, I think.
Oh my god, imagine listening to this on slow. Imagine the Problematic Corner theme song on slow.
This is a problematic theme song to a problematic corner.
The theme song itself is problematic.
Welcome along to the post-credits scene. What is the post-credits scene? No, I'll tell you the question. But what is the general concept of the post-credit scene? Because you normally introduced, I came in early with the...
It's okay.
What is the post-credit scene? For $5, that whole thing.
Yeah, so welcome along, everybody, to the post-credit scene. This is a section at the end of each of our episodes where if you donate $5 or more over at patreon.com/coldpopshire, you get to give us something to talk about in this, the post-credit scene. Richard, who's it from and what is it?
Today's post-credit scene comes to us from Dylan Hutton, who writes, what is a property you're nostalgic for, but deep down you know it's shit on reflection? I mean, the property would be 8 Gambier Street in Christchurch. That's where I grew up. The property had a house built on it. It's probably not aged well. We sold it because it was, you know, falling apart and whatnot, and it was, you know, at the time easy enough to just, let's just sell it and, you know, we can buy a new house with that instead of fixing it. So but I still, looking back to my days on Gambier Street, I'm still nostalgic for them. AJ, what about you?
Well, see, this is a franchise. Technically, it's similar to From Dusk Till Dawn, actually, in that it had one big movie and then some dwindling sequels. But the Butterfly Effect movies are kind of my go-to examples of, like, that first movie was really, like, big for me when I was a teenager, and every time I've revisited it since, I've been like, "Ah, this isn't very good," and I can't imagine how bad it probably is now. So if you want to hear that, suggest the Butterfly Effect trilogy, I guess.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of any actual answers rather than doxing my 10-year-old self. the number 23, people say, is real bad. Mm. I loved that in high school.
Same,
I haven't revisited
same situation.
It.
Same situation, yeah. But that's
I can't, I can't think of anything that I'm like – avoided going back to, because the only thing that I've, and I know you're actually, this is actually interesting because you're currently going back to it, but the one thing that I haven't, like, gone back to because I want to preserve my memory of it is Lost.
I've started
you've started rewatching it, but
I've started rewatching it because my flatmates, who are my best friends and I do everything with haven't seen it.
The fuck?
You're also my best friend.
What a fucking dig to put at the end of From Dusk Till Dawn.
No, it's not a dig against you.
A franchise about brothers.
Have other best friends.
Yeah, I saw a thing on Twitter that Mindy Kaling has a quote in some Mindy Kaling thing that best friend isn't a title, isn't a person, it's a tier.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
So if you make a tier list of people, best friend is the top one.
Absolutely. So they haven't seen it, and so we've been going back through it, and the funniest thing that I can say about in terms of has it dated with Lost is that the character who was once the image of like sexy badassery that was Sawyer, my flatmates have zero patience for. It's very funny. Every time Sawyer does something that disrupts the status quo, my flatmates are just like, people like this in real life are insufferable. What is a man in his 30s doing going around being like, no, you don't understand. If you really knew who I was, you'd hate me. It's like, oh, grow up, you know?
Yeah. I think, you know, the love for Sawyer, like, I never liked Sawyer's character that much, although I will say he has a pretty good redemption arc, or, like, his main characterization towards like season five mainly.
It's not so much that he was ever likable, it's that he was
just
like,
sexy. That's why people liked him.
Yeah, but it was like this, he was a rogue, and these mysterious elements about him were like, God, why is he so bad blooded? But now it's just like, this guy's a fucking loser. Oh my
god. It is like you do, because he's like that, it does allow for like any time he's good. Like there's the end of season one when he has the conversation with Jack, I remember being a really nice moment. But this is all to say, I haven't revisited Lost, not because I know it's shit on reflection. I still stand by it being good, but I just have such a perfect memory of that I wouldn't want to tarnish it with a rewatch.
Maybe that's why I'm happy to rewatch it, because my memory of Lost is rocky.
Well, not like I have a pitch, you know, like a eidetic memory of it. It's just that I the nostalgia I have for it, the way I watched it,
yeah,
the
no,
place
same.
Of my life I watched it, yeah. It's like this is this perfect thing, and it's like the appointment viewing, the religious viewing that it was.
Yeah.
I've never had anything like that since, and it's
I was thinking about that as well. That like I've definitely seen shows which I think are better than Lost since Lost, but in rewatching it, I'm reminded that like I don't know if I ever felt as good about a show as I did.
If I like cared as much. Breaking Bad would be the closest thing, but even that was like Lost as well. In the seasons 4, 5, and 6 was like I was the only one still watching it, and so it was mine, you know.
Yeah. Another thing that hasn't aged well about Lost is that I found out after googling the ages of actors that Evangeline Lilly, a lot younger than Matthew Fox and Josh Holloway.
How old is she in the series?
She's 24 in season one, and they are, Matthew Fox is in his late 30s, probably 38, 39, and Josh Holloway I think is 34, 35. So not the worst age difference.
Yeah, that's not as problematic as you made it out to be.
No.
You made it sound like it was like 39 and 12.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.